is FMR.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. As you know, today is Youth Day, the 16th of June, and we have someone today who's very involved with the youth, Charles Janssen, who works at the Butterfly Art Project as Art Center Coordinator and Training Materials Developer, which is quite a thing, I gather. He's been there for 10 years, and this facility has children from the ages of 5 to 21. So I want to find out, and I've invited Charles specifically for Youth Day to find out about the youth and how much you work with youth. Charles, welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, Rodney, and thank you for having me.
I think, first of all, we need to find out all about the Butterfly Art Project, BAP for short. What is it all about?
Yeah, so the Butterfly Art Project is an NGO that offers therapeutic art lessons to children, as well as train adults how they can do the same in their communities. So the program has two distinct programs that happens in our art center that I coordinate. We have what we call the Love Bug program, and that is a group of 40 severely neglected children. It's children that should be in school, but it's not in school. They are roaming the streets during school hours. So we house these children, not house, well, they come to our program 4 days a week, from 8 o'clock until 12 p.m. And while they're in the program, we get them ready so that they can function in a school environment, because either they've been to school or they've dropped out, or for some of these children, even it's the first time picking up a wax crayon. So while they're in the program, we work with their parents, the guardians, in trying to get them into a school. Most of the challenges here is substance abuse, alcohol or drugs, or loss of like legal papers. So the hopes of this program is, in partnership in working with the parents, we try and get their child into school. In the community that you work in, like I said, substance abuse, it's big. Yeah. So we try to not comment or, you know, judge the parents based on their mistakes. And then we come to an agreement in saying, yeah, we want to just help your child.
Are the parents agreeable to this? Do they want this to happen, or do you sometimes find that the parents don't want to have anything to do with the child?
So, yes, the parents are agreeable in wanting to work with us. Before we accept the child, they have to sign documents. One of the important points on their documents is that they are okay that we share the information of them and the child with state social workers in the event that anything might happen or need to happen. So yes, and for the most case, they are willing to work with us, because when these guardians they come to us, they've already been ostracized or shunned by the community because of the drug use. In the community that I live in, people would say something like, yeah, is my net a drunkie, or is my net a tukop, so just leave him. So that in itself puts these parents in a little box, even though they want to help, the community don't allow them to actually.
They ostracize them as well, not only the child.
There we go. So yeah, when they get to us, and because I'm from the community, I know the parents, guardians that we work with, and so because when they come to us, we do our best to not comment on the lives.
How do you get the children in the first place, off the street? How do you get them in?
So the program started 4 years back, and it was just a way to get children off the street, really just to give them a safe haven. Back then we would walk during school hours, and then if a child is on the streets during school hours, that for us would be an indication, okay, the child is in school or is not in school. We would then approach the child, ask the child to show us where he lives. We would accompany the child home. We would speak to the parent, and tell the parent about the program. And that is how we first recruited It's been 4 years now. The program has since evolved. And the recruitment now looks way different. Like, we don't have to walk in the communities, word of mouth. That's how it spreads. We've also been in contact with state social workers, because the work that we do with these children require a lot of partnerships. The Western Cape Education Department is one of them. Department of Social Development is one of them. So it was the community walkabout, and it's referrals by community members, and even state social workers wanting to bring their children to us. Yeah.
Do the children ever come in on their own, like they might have heard of a friend of theirs that's there, and so they come in and say, "I want to join."
Yes. So our program is all voluntarily for the children. The parents only have to sign the consent forms.
Said on the form.
It's only the consent form the parents sign, and then the rest is up to the child.
And how long would a child normally stay with you? How long is the process to rehabilitate them?
So minimum 3 months, maximum 12 months, because over the 4 years, we've learned, we've adapted, and then we more or less figured out that if you can't do anything within 12 months, then there's really nothing that you can do. So we give it about 12 months for a child to be with us. Children also outgrow our program, where they won't be stimulated in the program itself. So that is why we need to have a clear exit plan for the child before they get to the point where, like I said, they are not stimulated in the program anymore. Yeah.
Okay, my goodness, there are lots of questions I want to ask you, Charles. But tell me about your first piece of music, Urban Rescue, My Provider.
Yeah. That song really just speaks to what God does in my life. Even me sitting here right now, I'm an ex-drug addict, ex-criminal, you know, all the social ills that children on the Cape Flats would fall into, like I was victim to that. And through His grace, not anywhere but on the toilet in prison is where I found Him. Through His grace, he took me out of that. And this song really just speaks to how He provides for me beyond what I need or deserve, even. So yeah.
I believe You are able. I believe You are good. I believe You are with me even now. I believe You are greater than every mountain that I face. I believe You will supply all I need. You're all I need. Till the ocean runs dry, my God is my I believe you are good. I believe you are with me even now, even now. Till the ocean runs dry.
That's a group called Urban Rescue, and the song was called My Provider, and it was the first choice of my guest on this special Youth Day edition of People of Note. His name is Charles Janssen, who is the Art Center Coordinator and Training Materials Developer at BAP, which is the Butterfly Art Project. I wanted to ask you, Charles, you mentioned that you were a criminal, you were in prison, all the rest of it. At what sort of age did that? How did you get into a situation like that?
It's simpler than you think it is, if you would be in my circumstances. But just to give an idea, I had a happy childhood. Uh-huh. Both parents, lots of siblings around me. We lived in a community called Vrygrond, and directly. Translated, it means free ground. So I grew up with tall, like dunes, like big dunes, tall trees, lots of small wildlife. So that's what I had as a child.
Which sounds very nice and like soul confirming.
Here we go. No electricity, no sanitation, no tar roads. Wasn't missed because I didn't know it. So that was my childhood, both parents. When I got to grade 7, my parents split. I ended up with my dad. So my dad was a good provider. He was a really good provider. But that is what he did for me. He provided for my physical needs. As a teenage boy, I needed more than that. I can say this now, looking back.
In retrospect, yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I can say that now. So I had a lot of freedom on my hands after school. And my dad, being so busy, I was not in the mental state or in the capacity to do what he wants of me. So, I just walked away. I had lots of freedom. I met friends. It started off as a group of boys just giving us a name because we hang out. We then discovered you can't do that, because then it associates you with the gang. Then we were approached by gangsters. And at the time, like for a teenager, when you look at these gangsters, you look at them with admiration. You look at them with admiration because of how they come across.
They were obviously older than you.
Oh, yes, they were.
These gangsters.
They were much older than us. But like I said, you look at them with admiration. Because of all of the things that you see that you possibly don't get at home. And then they approached us and we were like, okay, yeah, sure, why not? Let's do it. That was also the same time I started using crystal meth. It started off as a social thing on weekends only. Because of it being so highly addictive, it went from being weekends to every day, dropping out of school, and then eventually having commit crimes to feed the habit. So, yeah, how I got into gangsterism, I had a lot of freedom in my hands. I was with a group of boys, like really close friends. And a time like this in a child or youth's life, it's really crucial, because youth, they look for, because they look to the future, they look for people who they can look up to. They look for professionals who they can, mirror after. That is what they look for. That is a healthy youth, a healthy development. If you are not so healthy and you grow up in underprivileged or poverty areas, your role models looks a little bit different. But as a youth, you still look to the future. So yeah, with admiration and wanting to hopefully one day get where they are, wanting to be a part of a group, wanting to share a love, a bond. It's how I started. And I just want to say, from the outskirts, you won't know it, but it's these boys in youngsters, they generally share a bond and a love for one another. To the point that I at one point felt in my life like I would really lay down my life for this guy.
Your friend, not the gangster.
The gangsters.
Oh, the gangsters.
The gangsters. Like, I don't know what sense of loyalty it builds. I don't know what that is it builds up in you. But that is what the youngsters are going, yeah.
And at no point did you think you were going down the wrong path.
Oh,
you
no.
You just went with him. And
I was too young at the time.
Yeah.
I was too young.
How did your father react?
Well, you see this? I burned a tattoo.
Yes.
Right? Because every time I came home, he then would confront me, telling me how he hates gangsters. And, you know, I'm not even going to go into that, but that's how he reacted. Until I eventually, one day, I was high. And then I asked my cousin, you know what? Let's get another thing. I came back, I showed him, and then he was happy. I was in pain, but like he was happy.
Why did you do that?
To please my dad, to please my father. That is why I did that.
To have a tattoo that caused you all that pain.
Yeah. Why did I get the tattoo to cause me all that pain? So the tattoo is the initiation mark to be part of the gang. That's the tattoo itself. The pain was the burning of the tattoo. That was to please my dad. I was the only one living with him. We were five siblings at the time. I was the only one living with him. All my other siblings, they lived with my mom.
And did they stay on the straight and narrow, the other siblings?
For
my part.
Yes.
Lucky.
Yes, all of them straight and narrow. I would what you would label as the black sheep in the family. You
know? So almost sort of unconsciously, you became part of a crime world as a result of meeting these gangsters.
Yes.
And for respecting them and even loving
for
them, as you said.
For respecting them and for loving them. But the crime was really fueled by the drug addiction.
Yeah, yeah. Because you needed money.
There we go. It was fueled by the drug addiction.
Okay, let's just take a break from this rather intense story. Your next piece, Charles, is Elevation Worship, A Million Little Miracles. Tell me about that. It's a gospel song, isn't it?
It is a gospel song. So, I choose to look at all the good in my life. I choose to acknowledge what I have that others don't. My health, my eyesight, all of these things. Like being able to get up in this morning. As a Christian and as a lover of Christ, I choose to look at all the good. In the songs, it talks about blessings that we get. You don't know where it comes from. It comes, you get it. And sometimes you even feel like you don't deserve it. It's really for me to appreciate what I have in my life, appreciate life itself. Because I like I said earlier on, just me being able to sit here having this conversation with you, it's one of those miracles. You know that God has provided for me.
All my life I've been carried by grace, Don't ask me how, 'cause I can't explain. It's nothing short of a miracle I'm here. I've got some blessings that I don't deserve. I've got some scars, but that's how you learn. It's nothing short of a miracle I'm here. I think it over and it doesn't matter. I know it comes from above. I've got miracles on miracles, a million little miracles. Yeah, miracles on miracles, count your miracles. 1, 2, 3, 4, I can't even count them all. Me steady so I wouldn't give up. You opened doors that nobody could shut. I hope I never get over what you've done. I want to live with an open heart. I want to live like I know who you are. It's not coincidence and it's not luck. I know it comes from above. I've got miracles on miracles, a million little miracles. Miracles on miracles, count your miracles. 1, 2, 3, 4, I can't even count them all. Miracles on miracles, a million little miracles. Miracles on miracles, count your miracles. 1, 2, 3, 4, I can't even count them all. 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 1, 2, 3, 4, I can't even count them all. Yeah, I can't even count them all. I try and I can't keep up.
I can't even count them all.
Yeah, I can't even count them all.
Count
them, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I can't even count them all.
Like when you heal my mother.
I can't even count them all.
When you redeem my father.
I can't even count them all.
Even in the death of my brother.
I can't even count them.
You are closer than no other.
I can't even count them.
Oh, you broke my teeth.
I can't even,
you saved my life. You set me free. You gave me victory. Oh, I can't even count them all.
I can't even count them all.
You kept my mind.
I can't even count them all.
You healed my body.
I can't even count them all.
Oh, I can't even count them all.
I can't even count them all.
I try and I can't keep up.
I can't even count them all.
'Cause every day. Clothes on my back.
I can't even
my mother would say, I got food on my table.
I can't even
Lord, I know that you're able.
I can't even count.
Say, I can't even
count.
I can't even miracles. I got miracles on miracles, a million little miracles. Yeah. miracles on miracles. Count your miracles. 1, 2, 3, 4. I can't even count them all. Miracles on miracles. A million little miracles. Thank you, Jesus, for the miracles on miracles. Count your miracles. 1, 2, 3, 4. I can't even count them all.
That's a piece called Elevation Worship, A Million Little Miracles. And certainly miracles have been part of my guest, Charles Janssen. It was his second choice. He works for the Butterfly Art Project, the Art Center Coordinator and Training Materials Developer. What a difference from your earlier life, Charles. So now you told us how you went downhill with the help of the gangsters and the admiration for them, the need for money to buy drugs. So how did you end up in prison? Was that the sort of low point, the lowest point?
Not really the lowest point.
You mean there were lower points?
Not really the lowest point. So the first time I ended up in prison.
Oh, have you been to prison more than once?
Oh, yes, I've been to prison so many times.
Oh, my.
So the first time, I was 16 years old. So it was at a time where we had to start robbing and stealing for drugs. So one friend of mine said, okay, we are going. You don't have to go with. You just stay and wait here. I thought to myself, if I don't go with now, when they get back, then I'm going to have to, depend, or, you know, I will have no say in what they bring back. So I said, no, I will go with. So I went with the one friend and then an older gentleman. This gentleman, he was already a 28 gangster. So he was long in the field, so I went with him. We then stopped two youngsters. Back then it was still the Nokia 3310s. Yes, that was the phone. And then we got that one. We're like, yes, we got a good one. But what happened was, because then we took the phone from these two gentlemen. We got on a bike. He lifted me. I was sitting in front. And then all of a sudden, he started to see police vans. I don't know what he saw. Then he took the gun he had on him. He threw it in a yard close by there. That yard had a small vibergrid wall. And then he asked me to get off and go fetch the gun. And that's what I did. So then I put the gun in my pants on my way back. When I just is about to cross the road, a white car pulls up, the door opens, I see someone sitting on top of me, hitting me, and then I wake up behind in the back of a police van. So that was the first time I went to prison. I could have gotten out because I was still a minor.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have gotten out the same day when my mom came in. But I thought I was smart or clever at the time, so I gave false names. And then the investigating officer at the time warned me about that. So my mom came looking for Charles. They didn't have a Charles. They only had a Michael that was there. So it was a little bit of a confusion. And then, yes, he kept his word, the investigating officer. And then I went to B5 for the very first time.
What is B5?
B5 is, they would, on paper, they would label it as a minor rehabilitation center, on paper. But it's actually just a prison for children. It's full on a prison. I don't know if that still operates, but it is 16, 17, 18 years old, 40 of them being thrown into a room.
That's where you ended up.
The first time.
You remember what age you were?
I was 16.
You were 16.
I was six. I distinctly remember. Yeah.
And were you? How long were you there?
Oh, I was there for 3 weeks the first time. And then I got off on my mom's custody. I was then placed under house arrest. And then I went back home with my dad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He never came.
And through all this experience, you never thought at that point of giving up this business that you were in?
Mm. So, no, no, no. Because
you were ready for the next round.
Yes.
So, and the drug addiction was still there.
So So at that first time, I really didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I was a teenager. It happened. There was no thoughts going through my mind of, you know, it was only I had or I want to get out of there.
Mm.
So at that point in my life, really, I wasn't given any thought to anything. But I would say this, that throughout, so from the age of 16 until the age of 26, I've been in and out of prison. So 3 months inside, 4 months outside, you know, just in, out, and it's been always a waiting trial, never sentenced. I was sentenced once. I got 12 months. But it's the same year that we got amnesty. So I got sentenced 12 months. I was in prison 2 weeks, and then I was kicked out, free. Everything dropped. Hence, miracles, and you know, understand?
Oh, yes, a million little miracles.
Here we go. So, but I wanted to say that with your question, did I ever stop of thinking it? I felt that at that point in my life, I was really, really close to God. I felt Him taking care of me. I would be on my way to go break into a home somewhere, and I would pray, and I would say a little prayer, confessing that I know what I'm doing is wrong. But I asked Him to take care of me, and He did that. He did that. But at no point in that time did I ever think of stopping. Purely because when you're on drugs and then you're on the outside, life drives very fast. No time to think. Mm-hmm. No time at all.
Freshly Ground and Shakira, Waka Waka. That's what you've chosen now.
Yeah.
Why just a favorite?
So I play that song when I teach with, so in the classroom I play music. It's one of the favorites in the classroom. But it was also a nice time for all South Africans, given the 2010 World Cup.
Oh yes,
do you remember that? So that song was specifically for that purpose, and then it was a marriage of different music industries, like international and South African. And yeah, I just really, really enjoyed that song. But it's also a reminder, you know, for all of us, of the hopes. We still have hopes. But yeah, it was one of those things where South Africa were like, yes, we're together.
I remember it so well. Okay.
So that is it, yes.
Up and dust yourself off and back in the saddle. You're on the front line, everyone's watching. You know it's serious, we're getting closer, this isn't over. The pressure's off, you feel it, but you got it all, believe it. When you fold it up, oh, oh, and if you fold it up, eh, eh, tamina, mina, sangalewa, cause this is Africa. Tamina, mina, eh, eh. It's time for Africa. Listen to your guy, this is our motto. Your time to shine, don't wait in line, it's almost both over. People are raising their expectations. And this is your moment, no hesitation. Today's your day, feel it. You pave the way, believe it. If you get down, get up, oh, oh. When you get down, get up, hey, hey. Tamina, mina, sangalewa. This time for Africa. Tamina, mina, hey, hey. Waka, waka, hey, hey. Tamina, mina, sangalewa. Anawa, Tamina, mina, hey, hey. For Africa. I'm my journey, biggie, biggie, mama, from east to west. I see you walk, walk, my, eh, eh, walk, walk, my, eh.
Waka Waka. Why are you laughing at me saying Waka Waka? Freshly Ground and Shakira. And it was another choice of my guest on this special Youth Day edition of People of Note, Charles Janssen, who works at the Butterfly Art Project and has shared, thank you, Charles, your rather scary story about, I think what's most scary is how easily you can get into this situation and become reliant on drugs. Mm. But you said right at the beginning how you were in prison and this love you had of God suddenly took hold of you and then everything changed. Mm. Can you explain that, how that happened?
Yeah. So, the love of God didn't start for me in prison. It started outside of prison. It's, mm-hmm. It started outside of prison for me. But prison was a time for me in my life where I could come back to myself, where I could be sober, where I could have sober thoughts and think in a straight and narrow. So when you go into prison, you have, well, I round it up to two trains of thoughts, right? The one is, I am so sorry for this, I will never do it again, and I never want to come back. That's the first one. Then you have the second one, which is, I did it this way, that is why I got caught, so now when I go out, I must do it another way. So those are really the two things that you are left with. It. I always went with the second one.
Oh,
I always went with the second one of how to improve it up until my last visit to prison in 2013. So, yeah, it's a normal day in prison. I then decided, you know what, I want to stop smoking. So it's only tobacco, mm-hmm. It's only tobacco, like the rollies.
Yes.
I made the choice. So I want to stop. So I said, once, a little bit at a time. So then I stopped in the evening. I stopped in the morning. I only did it in the afternoon. So, I just want to say this. The very next day when I made that decision, my friends arrived from court. Because they've been away. They arrived from court and they brought a whole lot of tobacco, whole lot of marijuana. I just made the choice to stop it. So I took a puff, but the guilt of that puff after I made a commitment to myself, I don't want that. Because there's no way you're going to hide from yourself.
Mm.
So, yeah, I was sitting on the toilet. And then I would call it a vision. But yeah, God showed me, he showed me basically two choices, where I'm going and where I could go. So, and then he asked me, what do you want? Where do you want to go? You want to go here or do you want to go there? So, at the time I was sober, my mind was cleared, and I wanted better for myself. For some reason, I always felt that I'm meant to do a little bit more than what I'm doing. So then, yeah, I then made the choice to choose the positive route of where God wants me to go.
So it was a very real experience for you, like you said, almost like a vision.
It's a very real experience for me.
Yeah.
It's a very, very real experience. So it will sound like a Mickey Mouse story to people who have not experienced God or Christ. There's nothing I can do to explain to you what it is like until you encounter it. Also, I shouldn't preach to you, but you should look at my life and admire it. So, very real, very vivid experience that I had. So that was the first part, right?
Yeah.
So then he came, he took away, he took away the cravings. There wasn't any crystal meth or mandrax in prison, right?
Yeah.
But when I got out, I didn't have a craving for it. So when I got out, I had to tell myself, I had to make some changes, right? One of those changes was that I should not walk around in my community the first day when I'm out, because people have missed you and then you will smoke and drink for free. And that normally puts you back in a cycle. So once you do that, one day for free, next day, you must go fend for yourself. You fend for yourself.
The cycle
that
begins.
That has been the cycle.
Yeah.
So what I changed this time, I said when I get home, I am going to sit in front of my gate and that is where I'll stay. I'm not going to move. I will sit there, and that is where I will stay. And I sat there for 2 weeks. It's like obviously during the afternoons when I want to go out, I just sat. I sat there because I knew in that point in time I was not strong enough to say no. I would not have been able to say no. So why put myself in that situation? So 2 weeks went past, and then I was offered a job at a ECD as a janitor. So, but I always did art signwriting in the community. That is when a very special lady in my life approached the ECD. Her name is Angela Katzke.
What is ECD?
Early Childhood Development Center. Okay. Kindergarten.
Okay. Yes, kindergarten. Yeah.
So Angela Katzke, who is the founder of the Butterfly Art Project, she was advertising the Community Art Facilitators course, which is a training course that teaches you various art disciplines and mediums, but all with the purpose to help heal and stabilize children. So she left the flyer there. My boss handed me the flyer because my boss knew that I love to be creative. And then my boss said, okay, I think this is something that you would love to attend. Now, I was at that time, right mindset. I can do attitude and I want to do no wrong attitude. That's when I met Bob, the Butterfly Art Project. So then I went to the training and I was there on time. I did my homework. I was very creative. And then they took a liking to me. They really took a liking to me. And then 11 years later, I'm still there.
I just want to find out a little bit more about why you're still there and what exactly you do. Like apparently you're a skilled visual artist as well. So we'll come to that. But your next song is Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. That's slightly unexpected.
Yeah. This is for my little boy, Connor. He is 18 months. So he can be going through a fit, through a tantrum. And he does that. He goes with a tantrum. But it's not supposed to be Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. I hum the A, B, C, D. So that's what I hum.
Oh, which is the same.
But when Vanessa said, no, it's Twinkle, but I said, okay, that's fine. So it's really for my son, because that in that moment, I really feel that he feels safe, loved, and comforted by me. Even to the point where he wants to feel the vibrations of my vocal cords, then it goes up and then
touches your neck.
Here we
yeah,
go. Like
it's very cute. And yeah, how old? 18 months.
18 months, yeah. Yes. 18
so you've
months.
Got one child.
I've got one child, yes.
And okay, I want to find out after the music how you met your wife and got married.
Not yet wife. Not yet.
Oh, not yet wife. Okay.
Not yet.
Okay,
not
but
yet
you've
wife.
Got a lovely little child. Let's listen to
boy.
This Twinkle, Twinkle song. Thank you. We all know that tune, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And you, Charles, you said you used ABCD.
I used ABCD, but he loves that.
Charles Janssen is my guest. Now, the Butterfly Art Project, we spoke about at the beginning, but they say you're a skilled visual artist, art facilitator in training. So art obviously plays a major part because it's called the Butterfly Art Project. Mm. And does that mean literally drawing, teaching these children who come off the street to draw as a form of therapy?
Yes, so the Butterfly Art Project offers therapeutic art classes. In simple terms, it means that we provide the children with a safe space. Mm-hmm. We provide them with structure for the day. We provide them with a routine and rhythm over 8 weeks. And then also expose them to all the different mediums. Paint, sculpt, drawing. Graphics is drawing. What am I missing? It's painting, sculpting. Okay, that's the three.
Yeah.
That's the three. So, as an artist, I believe that the mediums itself, like for example, your encounter with clay, has an effect on your body, similar to paints. The color has an effect on your body, similar to the graphics. So the mediums that the children are exposed to really does something for them. Where if you work with clay, you use your limbs, you activate your body, paint, you activate your feelings, because that's where you paint from, and then when you're drawing graphics, you activate
your mind,
your thinking. Mm. So that is what we teach the children. So, I've been there. It's going to be 11 years now. So the children, the classes are free, the children sign up, and then every year we work with a theme. Not to, forgive the word, therapeutize, or it's none of that. Like I said, we're providing a safe space.
Yeah, yeah.
Something that's very important in our classes is that we must provide these children with accountable and reliable adults. We also ask them that they must be emotionally mature or emotionally stable adults. So that's very important for us, the adult in the classroom. That's very important, accountable, because the children that come to the classes, some of them, or most of them, they already don't have like these adults in their lives, and we don't want to repeat that in our spaces. So what they get out there is not what they should get in our art classes. So in creating a safe space, in forming a relationship with the art teacher, trust develops. Trust gets built, and it is through that a child or a person would then self open up and speak about things.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to ask, or we call fish, for things, because if you ask a child, for example, about a traumatic event, what happens is that that child gets transported back to where it happened. So in their mind, they are where whatever the event was, they are there. And me as an adult, if I'm not strong enough to hold that situation, I do more damage.
I see what you mean. So how many people are involved in teaching?
So I'm going to explain the Butterfly Art Project a bit more clearly. So we are a team of 9 people. So most of them are on admin. And then we have one facilitator, it's full-time, that's myself. And then we have a program manager that's also full-time, but he's also a facilitator. And then the rest of the facilitators running the classes, they are outsourced contractors. So it's more than 20 people on the payroll, but we have more than 200 community art facilitators. These are people that volunteer in the communities of art classes to children.
Wow. And what about funding? How do you get money to run a place like this?
I want to say it's not my problem yet, but
lucky you.
South African funding, international funding. So a lot of funding proposals. Sometimes the city also kicks out. Funding proposals. So that's how we get it.
Charles, we have to end, as riveting as your story is. But if people want to get hold of you to find out more about BAP, the Butterfly Art Project, or just to learn what's going on or to help? How do they get hold of you?
Yeah. Visit our website. It's www.butterflyartproject.org.
Okay.
Just visit the website. Everything that you would want is on there. What we offer, dates. Oh, and just to mention, all of our courses on offer is free.
Gosh,
it's
my goodness.
Free. We don't charge
it's
anything.
It's an extraordinary story, Charles. I have to congratulate you because, and as you say, this very school project is in the community in which you grew up.
Vrijgrond, yes.
Right. Charles, you're a star, and I gather they like you very much and they call you Sir Charlie. I was told secretly. Sir Charlie, what is your last piece of music and why? Darius Rucker.
Darius Rucker to be a man. So, I almost want to say that like it makes you want to feel sorry about yourself for being a man or a father. The song speaks about how society really don't want to listen to what a man has to say, but forces him to just do what he needs to do. Be a provider, be a father, be this. Little to no room for soft conversations. And the song is really just, yeah, it reminds me of that.
Charles Janssen of the Butterfly Art Project, it's been uplifting to speak to you.
Thank you. Carry
on the good work. You certainly are doing a wealth of good for these children. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you, Rodney. Thank you for having me.
I can't hide myself. I don't expect you to understand. I just hope I can explain what it's like to be a man. It's a lonely road, and they don't care about what you know. It's not about how you feel, but what you provide inside that home. Being a man is what you make it. You can't always live up to expectations. You try to please everybody while you struggle, so you fake it and end up out of balance, compromising situations. As a good man, do what he should, man. Give everything he has and do everything he could, man. You might find yourself feeling all alone inside a house you built that you don't recognize as home. And that's what my daddy told me, and I'll tell my son the same. Now that I'm older, I relate and I actually feel his pain. He never cried, he might have lied, but he did not complain. And he said, son, one day you'll have to do the same. I get emotional when I stop and think and I look around beyond the county lines of my small town. I think about all the men out there who feel like I do now, who are screaming on the inside but won't ever make a sound. I can't hide myself. I don't expect you to understand. I just hope I can explain what it's like to be a man. It's a lonely road, and they don't care about what you know. It's not about how you feel, but what you provide inside that home. Don't give up, keep fighting. As a man, our sun is our horizon, and our father's actions play a role, and we end up like them. So they can't let us see them hurt, cause we'll embody what they do and start a generational curse. No wonder most men are so depressed, all the things that they can't express. They go to war, get thrown on the shelf, then go back to war with their mental health. Then grab that bottle and ask for help, try to pull themselves out of hell. Then fall back down and then realize that they're gonna have to do with themselves. It's the circle of life. As a man you provide, they don't know what you're worth till the day that you die. And that's when they start crying. That's why we feel we can't hide ourselves.
We can hide ourselves.
We don't expect you to understand. We just hope we can explain what it's like to be a man. It's a lonely road, and you don't care about what we know. It's not about how we feel, but what we provide inside.
Inside that home.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
This is FMR.